This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Focus podcast. I'm your host, G. Sampath. Elon Musk is coming to India. He is meeting Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and this visit is expected to see him announce the entry of Tesla into the Indian market. The timing of this visit is rather interesting. Tesla used to be the world's largest seller of electric vehicles or EVs, but it lost the title to China's BYD Auto last year. Also, most of the EV markets in the West, in North America and Europe, are in a slowdown. In China, Tesla has been losing ground to local competitors, but India, on the other hand, is looking to expand its EV density in a big way. It unveiled a new EV policy in March that is seen by many as tweaks to make the country more attractive for Tesla. So, what is the agenda of Musk's visit in the context of EVs? Is the price-conscious Indian market ready for the kind of expensive vehicles that Musk sells? And if Tesla is allowed to sell imported cars, what happens to quote-unquote make in India and technology transfer to local manufacturers? We discuss all these questions and more in this episode of In Focus, and we have with us Randhir Singh, who is the CEO and founder of 4C Advisors, an electric mobility and battery storage consulting firm. Randhir was previously with Niti Aayog as director of e-mobility. Randhir, thank you so much for your time and welcome to In Focus.
Thank you, Sampath, for inviting me to the Hindu podcast. I'm looking forward for the discussion.
Great to have you here. Thank you so much. And to start with, Randhir, can you give us a quick overview, a sort of background of India's policy with regard to EVs, and what departures do we see from that policy position with the new EV policy which was unveiled in March this year?
So, Sampath, I will call India's approach to EVs has traditionally been cautious, mainly underscored by the National Electric Mobility Mission Plan, which was put forth mainly in the discussion in the forum in 2020, and the FAME India schemes, which aim to support hybrid as well as electric technologies through incentives and subsidies. The new EV policy, in fact, I will call it a remodeled EV policy, which was introduced in June 2021. It actually was the game changer as far as the adoption is concerned. You know, the subsidies were increased from 10,000 to 15,000 INR on a per kilowatt hour basis. And also the biggest part is the cap was increased to 40% per vehicle of their price. And now recently, EMPS...
The cap was increased to 40%, as in I didn't get it. Like, the subsidies were for the manufacturers?
No, this is only at the demand side. So for example, let's say your vehicle is selling at 100,000. That means 1 lakh rupees. And your vehicle has 3 kilowatt hour of the battery, two-wheeler. Then 15,000 per kilowatt hour transforms to 45,000 rupees. But because your vehicle price is 100,000 and 40% is the cap, so you will get not 45,000, but 40,000 rupees.
So you will effectively pay 60,000 rupees for buying that bike.
Exactly. And it is at the consumer. These incentives are the demand incentives, not the manufacturing. Yeah. And in fact, recently with 500 CR, because even FAME 2 has ended by March this year. So to give some, you know, comfort to the manufacturers as well as the consumer, government has come out with an electric mobility promotion scheme. This has only 500 CR. And I think it's just a makeshift gap or just a one stop, I can say. I'm not sure whether the FAME 3 is coming or not coming, but for this scheme, this has much reduced.
FAME as in, what is the full form? Like, how do we expand FAME for the benefit of those who don't follow the...
Yeah, so it's a faster adoption and manufacturing of, in bracket, hybrid and electric vehicles in India.
Okay.
So it's both for hybrid as well as the electric vehicles. Yeah, and within this scheme, so it was first FAME 1 was long back, that was around 500 CR, and the FAME 2 was 10,000 CR, which has some carryover from the FAME 1 also. And then it was not picking up because of the COVID and so many other reasons, framed according to the market expectation. So in June 2021, remodeled FAME was introduced. And that's where all these changes which I'm talking about was done. In fact, the buses side, the big changes had happened. You know, almost 40% of the total 10,000 crore were allocated to the public buses. And none of that buses were picking up. So new OPEX model was introduced at that point of time. As far as the private buses were concerned, there was no incentive, and currently also there is no incentive for the private buses.
Right. So coming to the passenger vehicle segment, Randhir, so in around 2021, 22, Elon Musk, I mean, according to reports, was in talks with Indian government for bringing Tesla to India, but it didn't really work out because he wanted certain concessions in terms of duty cuts and so on. So what exactly were his demands then? You know, because this was also around the time when you said this new EV policy was launched. Why did India not accept them then? And what has changed in the intervening period for India now to agree to some duty cuts in the new policy and revise its stance and respond positively to Musk's demands?
So Elon Musk pushed in 2021 for reduced import tariffs. It was actually on the lines to drop from as high as 100%, in fact, almost 110% to 40%. It was mainly aimed at making Tesla vehicles financially viable in India. However, as you know, it was not accepted. And India's rejection was mainly based on protecting domestic manufacturers and promoting local production. In fact, there were several representations from the industry associations like SIAM also, which were given at that point of time. You know, all the manufacturers are Indian manufacturers are part of SIAM. But as of 2023, I think the reconsideration seems plausible because India has adjusted its stance by potentially lowering the traffic mainly to attract EV makers so that it can stimulate the tech transfer. So if you see in the last 3 to 4 years, in terms of the four-wheelers, we don't have much choice available in the market. In fact, more than 70% of the EV four-wheeler sales is only by the one company and the one vehicle, in fact, which we know, Tata Nexon. So we don't have much choice available from that perspective. Of course, when we talk about the Elon Musk vehicles, they are not in that segment where in the Nexon place, but as such technology perspective is considered, as such the EVs is considered, you know, these are the vehicles which are the torchbearer. So I think this reflects a more global outlook towards building a resilient domestic EV market, and more so towards building the charging infrastructure. Because if you go and see what has happened in the last 2 years in US, is almost all the companies, which includes the Toyota, Mercedes-Benz, GM, everybody has said that they are going to utilize and adopt the Tesla's charging infrastructure for their vehicles. So in fact, that in itself has become a big company, that the charging infrastructure for the Tesla. So it also resembles a bigger shift whenever it enters to a certain market. So I think it all getting derived from that perspective. That's how this stance has changed. That's what I think.
Right. I mean, 2 points here, Randhir, on which I wanted your thoughts. One, of course, when you spoke about Tesla's charging infrastructure, I mean, that's a very recent thing. I mean, Elon Musk has sort of used his Tesla charging infrastructure as some kind of, you know, a barrier for others. It was only exclusively for Tesla users until, I think, recently, where he negotiated that in exchange for some more extra subsidies, he will open up his infrastructure to others. So I don't know. Let's hope that if he comes here, he will make it open from the word go to everybody who wants to use the charging infrastructure. That is number one. Number two, I mean, Elon Musk has never believed in joint ventures. You know, he said so himself when I reviewed his biography recently, and throughout, I mean, everywhere he wants to go it alone, you know. So even in China, they made an exception for him. So without this JV being on the agenda, how do you expect that Tesla technology will be transferable or transferred to any Indian local manufacturer?
Sampath, you are very right that wherever they go full-fledged and alone, and they do on their own, except the batteries part, which they do with the Panasonic. So they design it, and the Panasonic Gigafactories produces it. But as far as the vehicle is concerned, they go all alone. They take all the components, everything from everywhere else, and they themselves do it. Nobody else, as far as the JV is concerned, is their partner. So when they are going to come to India, I don't see they are going to form a JV. Although we have read recent reports, and I don't want to point out specifically, we know the biggest company in India is actually in the news for a potential JV. But looking at the history, how Tesla has worked in other countries also, I really don't see it. Second part is within the scheme, what 500 million investment scheme which has been given, which transforms to around 4,150 crore rupees. Within this scheme, they have to localize minimum 20 to 25% of the total parts within 3 to 5 years. And I think that's a big ask for the companies who have less than 1/100 of the traditional gasoline in gasoline vehicle parts. That's a big ask from that perspective. And currently, if you see in India, of course, we don't produce the cells, which comprises of almost 30 to 35% of the total EV in as far as the value is concerned, but remaining 60 to 65% of the vehicle. In fact, within this also, we don't have the permanent magnets. We right now don't do most of the, you know, the high tension and that type of wiring, which is not produced. And most of the things are being procured from outside. As far as the motors and the controllers are concerned, we do the assembly here, but the child parts mainly comes from outside. So I think that is the big ask initially within 3 to 5 years. Coming back to your question, as far as the tech transfer is concerned, I really don't see that within the purview of the current scheme, this tech transfer as such is going to happen. And we may end up paying the royalty to the, you know, the host, which is the US entity of the Tesla, as far as the technology is concerned, if it is going to be registered in India as a new vehicle production facility.
Right. I mean, can you just explain a little bit that scheme you refer to? I mean, in exchange, so in exchange for what exactly will Elon Musk have to invest 4,150 crores within a span of 5 years? I mean, in exchange for the duty cuts will be down to from 100% to 40%. Is that what he's getting for importing his cars?
15%. And they can import
15% from 100 to 15, 1.5.
Yes, 1.5. Not only for him, actually, within this scheme, every country qualifies from. So there is no, if you follow IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, there are four countries of concern within the IRA. That means in US, if even if 0.1% of input is from those countries, you don't get the incentives of IRA. However, in this particular case, we have not kept any country outside. So even if some Chinese manufacturer, let's say BYD, wants to come to India with the same models, with more than $35,000, you know, the cost of their vehicles, and they can import up to the 8,000 CBUs, completely built units per year, then everybody would be eligible for this type of incentive.
Okay, including VinFast. I think that the Vietnamese company, they've also, I think, applied for investment, and it's still, yeah, it's still being looked at and all that.
Correct. They actually, they have already inaugurated their facility in Tamil Nadu. The inauguration has also, inauguration means the construction part has begun already.
Okay, so it's been approved more or less.
Yes, their investment has been approved.
Okay, Randhir, India now, and just taking a step back for the big picture here, India has an ambitious goal of EV 30 at 30, or that 30% of all new vehicle sales will be electric vehicles by 2030. Now, that is a huge goal to have. I mean, very difficult. So what is needed in terms of infrastructure, in terms of manufacturing capacity and other aspects in order to achieve this? And where do we stand exactly on these? How far away from this?
You know, to meet the ambitious target of EV 30 at 30, where 30% of the new vehicle sales by 2030 are EV, we have to really scale up our infrastructure and manufacturing capabilities both. And the as far as the country currently where we stand, in terms of the DC chargers, we have less than 1,800 DC charging stations in India. And we have to, you know, if I include AC and DC both, around 1 million charging stations, charging points, I should say, should be there by 2030. So we are really, we still need to do a lot from the, as far as the charging in stations are concerned.
So we need 1 million, but today we have how many? 8,000?
No, around 1,800 of DC. And
1,800, okay.
DC charging station. And as far as the AC is concerned, is around 8,000 plus. But if we take the private chargers, then the number stands very high. But public charging stations is what I'm talking about here. Now, if we further expand this to meet the recommendation of ARAI, which says one station per 25 kilometer. In fact, Ministry of Power has also come out with the recommendation that they want to put at least one charging station, DC charging station per 100 kilometer and AC charging station per 25 kilometer on either side of the highways connecting the 9 top cities, which are 4 million plus population cities.
Right.
And this is one. And the second thing is we also need to expand our manufacturing output. Currently, I'm not talking about only the cells. Let's talk about even the batteries part. We assemble almost 3 gigawatt hour of the batteries, which we actually need to surpass to 120 to 130 gigawatt hour. As far as the cell manufacturing is concerned, we manufacture almost nothing. Everything is imported right now, cell manufacturing.
From? Where do we import from?
From 3 major countries. One is China, second is South Korea, and very little from the Japan. But 90 to 95% of the cells still come from the China. And we have zero production right now in India. Of course, advanced chemistry cell program, which was implemented last year, and the 3 beneficiaries are there. They have the mandate to produce the locally sourced, minimum 25% of the local sourcing should be there by the end of this year, 2024. Yeah. And these beneficiaries are, one is the Ola, second is the Rajesh Exports, and the third is the Reliance. So Ola has around 20 gigawatt hour of the capacity allocated. Rajesh and the Reliance both have 5 gigawatt hour of the capacity allocated. And the plan was actually for the 50 gigawatt hour. Out of that, now 10 is again at the bidding stage and 10 will come later on, which will be mainly, as far as I know, targeted not for the EVs, but specifically to the ESS, energy storage services.
Right. Now, Randhir, when you spoke perceptively about this need for increasing our manufacturing capacity. Now, we know that BYD Auto came to India with, a $1 billion proposal, EV plant, to set up an EV plant. As a joint venture, that too, with an Indian company, but we turned it down. And BYD is also a battery superpower, and they were willing to do a joint venture. They're willing to invest. And India, as you rightly said, is dependent on China for 90% of the sales. So in this context, do you think it's a strategic mistake in turning down this kind of an investment proposal from BYD just because it's the Chinese company?
Sampath, partly I agree. In fact, rejecting BYD's $1 billion investment for an EV plant in India, that was also in partnership with a local company, it might seem like a missed opportunity. Especially, as you already rightly spoken in the beginning of the podcast, BYD has overtaken Tesla in global EV sales and leads in battery technology also. That is one very important part. So this decision might be reevaluated in light of the new policy frameworks, which are mainly to attract the foreign investment. And I think this that scheme which we are talking about only for the Tesla, you know, BYD also has the vehicles which are also costing more than $30,000 to $35,000. I think this is a right point and right opportunity even for the BYD to come back and produce not only those vehicles, but, you know, BYD has very, very good vehicles in sub $10,000 range also. And I think they can also produce those vehicles for which the demand in India is currently also huge. And in future, when we are going to surpass the 5% of the adoption inflection point, it is going to, you know, explode. I think that's where the earlier mistake can be corrected through the policy which is right now being taken.
Right. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned that BYD Auto also has got smaller, as in sub $10,000 cars, which are cheaper. I mean, Tesla's cheapest car, which is the Model 3 sedan, I mean, it retails at $40,000 in the US, which would be definitely about 35 lakhs in India. Even with all the duty cuts down to 15%, it's not going to cost less than 35 lakhs, which means it's going to be in the de facto luxury segment. So if we are looking at faster adoption, EV 30 at 30, and you know, we have, the largest selling EV right now is these three, right? This Nexon, Tigor, and Tiago, I think. And they are like almost like small cars, you know, very much in the lower segments. So, and BYD Auto has this, EVs in this segment also, you know, sub 10,000. So how is it really going to make a difference? If Tesla's coming to India, I mean, how is it going to make a difference in terms of pushing up EV sales volumes when it is not going to be in the mass market segment at all in the first place?
You are right. It is not going to be in the mass market segment. Now, let's look at how the luxury market in India is. It's around 40 to 46,000 vehicles is the luxury market segment in India. Within that, how many EVs were sold? It's less than 1,500 EVs which were sold. If we talk about currently whatever the models, the manufacturers who are present. When the Tesla enters into this market, my opinion is Tesla is not only another vehicle manufacturer company, but you generally people compare this with, you know, the arrival of the Apple in the phone market is similar to arrival of the Tesla in this market. So it represents one. That means India as a country is open to have the global competition, the globally manufactured company, the torchbearer of the EV revolution in four-wheeler segment, and also meanwhile protecting our own benefits, because mind it, they have to manufacture in India within the 4 to 5 years. And no matter what happens, Tesla can only sell its vehicle if and only if they have sound infrastructure in place. If you wire the vehicle and you say that there are no charging points available for the Tesla vehicles, their superchargers and other things are not available, I don't think people are going to buy it. You need to give the experience at this particular segment. And that is where, although the vehicle side, they are getting a lot of incentives, but there is no incentive as far as the charging infra is concerned, which has to be done to have a particular level of sales for the Tesla. Now, as far as the Tesla Model 3 is positioned, it's for sure luxury car segment, and anything more than $35,000, which transforms to around, you are rightly pointing out, around 35 lakh rupees, it's a luxury segment. But Tesla's presence can actually spur not only infrastructure development, which right now I said, but also the consumer awareness and acceptance of EVs in this segment, wherein the adoption right now is very, very, in fact, I can say it, well, it is almost nil. And you rightly said the most of the sales, in fact, more than 90% of the sales has happened of the segment, which is less than 25 lakh rupees. Because I will also add the Hyundai Kona in the same segment. The sale of Hyundai Kona is also very, very good. The Hyundai Kona, Tigor, now the Punch EV, which is sub 10 lakh vehicle, is also selling very, 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 very well. And that's why I said if the BYD comes, then the same sub $10,000 vehicle sales in India will rise.
Right. Thank you so much for this, Randhir. I mean, you really laid out the other dimension of this whole question.
Just yeah, one please. Point I'll put it here is Tesla's own sales volume will also remain very modest, although they might enter into this $40,000 to $46,000 market. But one shift which recently we have seen, and in terms of the total luxury vehicles sales also, the increase is quite high. It's more than 10 to 15%. So if we see the total sales by, let's say, 2030, this 40 to 46,000 market, I think is going to increase, is going to become almost double, around 80 to 85,000. when I'm talking about the 30 lakh plus cost vehicle sales.
Right. Also, Tesla's numbers are going to be limited because at least in the first few years, he can only import 8,000 cars, right?
Correct, correct. A CBU, he can only import up to the 8,000. If they have to do anything more than that, they have to manufacture here with a minimum of 20 to 25% localized parts by value.
Right. Now you spoke about Hyundai Kona and the fact that Tesla would be compelled to set up its own charging infrastructure if it's going to, you know, set up a manufacturing plant and looking at a long term, you know, presence in India. Now, looking as far as the present day is concerned, are EVs in India as of today, maybe for the next couple of years, likely to be restricted for use only within city limits, because, you know, the battery capacity is limited and charging infrastructure is really not there? Are EVs going to be only for city use right now?
With Tesla, actually, this particular thing is not valid, because you see, their vehicle comes with 300 to 400 kilometers range minimum. Anybody driving within the city limits with 300 to 400, you know, as per the survey, currently the average consumer in four-wheeler segment drives 17 to 22 kilometers per day. That's what its requirement is. Even in our case, although that it takes a lot of time within to conquer the traffic, you know, I'm talking about the Mumbai, the Delhi and the Bangalore. But in terms of the kilometers, we hardly travel more than 50 to 55 kilometers per day to and fro, I'm talking about. But let's assume somebody wants to travel a lot in a particular day. Nobody's going to travel more than 100 or 150 kilometers. I'm talking about the personal use. That is the maximum. Even if you go from one place to another, let's say from Mumbai to Pune, you are going, you're not going to travel more than 200 kilometers one way or 250 kilometers one way. This vehicle is going to take care of this. However, when you are going to make a travel more than 300 kilometers, that's where the range anxiety kicks in for this type of vehicles. And the vehicles which are currently available, I would say they promise 250, 300 kilometers, but around 180 or 190 kilometers is the range which you practically get on road. That means you need to have a fast charger on all major highways, connecting all major highways. At least one DC charger at 100 kilometers is sufficient for sure on all the highways, because you're not going to charge 100% of your vehicle. You will be doing the top up, which can be within, anyway, fast charging happens between 30 minutes to 20 minutes. But even if you get the fast charger for, let's say, 10 minutes, you will be achieving at least 130, you know, one third of the total range, which would be in case of the 300 kilometers, 100 kilometers in one charge. So that's where the lot of infrastructure has to be put in. Currently, if you see within the policy, which is the charging infrastructure of 800 crores rupees within the FAME II itself, and it has been given to the oil marketing companies to put up the charging infra, they have promised to put up around 22,000 charging points. As far as I know, currently
22,000 charging points in how much time? Like by when?
By the end of 2025. That is what the target for them is. And as far as, you know, when these charging points come,
so these charging points will be put up at petrol stations, petrol pumps.
Yes, yes. So what is happening right now is all of them are putting at the petrol bunks only. But I recently had a chance to discuss the same issue with one of the MDs of the oil marketing companies. And he pointed out the utilization rate is very, very less. It's 1.5 to 2%. So this doesn't make economic sense for them. And they try to find out on their own what are the reasons. The reasons are very simple. You know, the vehicle cannot remain standing there for so long. And when EV charger comes to your place, he cannot afford to being sit in the vehicle or just roam around within the premise for his vehicle to be, you know, parked there, getting charged for 15, 20, 30 or 40 or 50 minutes there. He needs to have a proper parking plaza and all those things. Those needs has not been taken care. So going forward, some of the OMCs are going to adopt two types of models. One is that they are also putting up the battery swapping, which is not right now valid for the four-wheelers. They are also putting within the city limits. But at the highways, they are putting up a separate, let's say they have a petrol bunk there, Next to it, they will be putting up the plazas, which should be called as the charging plazas, so that instead of putting one or two, more than 5 or 10 vehicles can get fast charged at those places. And they are doing away with putting up the slow chargers. All the chargers which they will put will be the fast chargers. So what I see right now, and two tenders are in public domain from the OMCs. One is from the IOCL for around 4,000 chargers. Out of 4,000, 3,000 are 60 kilowatt chargers, and 1,000 are the 120 kilowatt chargers. And another is by the BPCL, which has already been finalized. All of them are going for the fast chargers.
Right, so when you talk about parking, these plazas, are they also, in addition to this 5 to 10 charging points, are they also going to be having maybe a place to go and have coffee while your car charges, some kind of shopping, etc.?
Exactly. So if you happen to travel, I'm just giving you one example, even in the current petrol bunks also, the situation is like this for the bus drivers and all. So in some of the highways, if you go, along with the petrol bunks, you will see a lot of, you know, the plaza type of arrangement is there. But in case of the EVs, this is, I would say, necessity. It's not a luxury. In case of gasoline, it is a luxury. But in case of EVs, this is something which is a necessity. And you rightly said, it will be like having the cup of coffee. You can rest a bit. You can do some other stuff, the cafe and other things. That type of plazas are needed because most of these vehicles are being driven by the individual owners.
Right. We're running out of time, Marandi. So one last question before I let you go. So there is, I mentioned it earlier, there is a global slowdown in the EV market, and which I find a bit strange because everybody is talking about, you know, increasing the renewables component, and, you know, because of climate crisis, climate mitigation. And this global slowdown in the EV market is also one of the main reasons why Tesla's stock has been tanking in recent months. It's also one of the reasons why Musk is now seriously looking at India, the Indian market. So how do we understand this slowdown at all? I mean, when India is giving a big push to renewables, to EVs, what is happening elsewhere? Just a quick big picture.
Yeah, so the slowdown in the global EV market is, it's primarily driven by supply chain disruptions and the raw material shortages. Both the things. One is a supply chain disruption. Second is raw material shortages. When I say raw material shortages, it boils down to the critical minerals for the batteries also. However, this actually presents an overall opportunity for India to leverage its substantial market size and growing technological capabilities so that FDI can be attracted. But one bigger part, the opportunity which it presents for India is actually to become a global hub, or at least the India Pacific hub, for the manufacturing of these four wheelers. If we just find out how many actual manufacturers are there, forget the EVs, in terms of the gasoline vehicles also, Mahindra and Tata, who else is there? Maruti Suzuki is actually depends a lot on the royalty which is being given by the Suzuki. So actually speaking, we hardly have any of the four-wheeler manufacturers in India. And when it comes to the EV, there is none.
Right. So you spoke about the supply chain disruptions and raw material shortage as reasons for the slowdown. But how is India? India is not a source of raw materials, nor is India a part of the global supply chain. How will India be able to overcome these challenges in terms of supply chain and raw materials, even if Tesla were to set up base in India?
So two things will happen. One thing is, India is actually one of the biggest part manufacturer right now. And as far as, let's talk about specifically the EV supply chain. From the battery size, Tesla is not going to manufacture the batteries as of now. They will be importing the battery as such. And the CBO, of course, it will be completely built somewhere else, which will be coming to India. It may come from the China also, because they have a huge manufacturing capacity there. But going forward, when we talk about the localization, so they already take some of the parts from India. Those parts, if go from India, has a higher cost. In fact, those are high cost parts. Some of those parts are very high cost. And again, not all the Indian companies are manufacturing there. There are some of the German companies who have the base in India. They manufacture in India and supply to these manufacturers across the world. That is one thing which is going to lower their cost. Second thing which is going to happen is if and when Tesla decides, and you know, we have recently seen IOCL along with Panasonic has formed a joint venture. In fact, the MOU has been signed. And Panasonic is the supplier for the Tesla vehicles. Panasonic is the cell supplier for the Tesla vehicles. And if they happen to put up the facility here, right now, Indian government through the Indian entity, which has already, I'm not putting up the name here, is getting in agreement with the ABCs of the critical minerals, as well as with the Australian sourcing house for the raw material, critical minerals. Now, because of recent disruption which has happened in Ukraine, the nickel was the one which is greatly impacted. And if you see in the last 8 to 9 months, even the total cost of these critical minerals, nickel, cobalt, manganese, and lithium, the cost has gone down by 1/3. So definitely currently, India doesn't have the critical mineral. Also, although this one place in Riyasi in Jammu, wherein the lithium has been found, still the commercial exploration is going to take 5 to 8 years. And we don't know what will be the final availability of the usable lithium there. However, as far as the current supply chain, the disruptions which I was talking about is a concern. In fact, India also doesn't have the right solution as of now available. However, we are rightly positioned to actually provide, you know, what everybody is talking about, the China Plus strategy. However, still there will be a lot of dependence which will be there on the supply of these things, in fact, the processed minerals from the China. Although there are around 4 companies in India who have entered in the processing of the raw materials, critical minerals when I'm talking about, also anode and the cathode manufacturing. In fact, one of the anode manufacturer, as far as I know in India, has already qualified its raw material with the GM in US. So that, and anode, it forms a very, very big component. That means it's a new entrant. And you know what? As far as the anode manufacturing is concerned, more than 90% of the market is concentrated only in China. Although the cathode, around 65 to 70%. So similarly, other companies are also arising. And I think that provides, in terms of the long-term perspective, it takes 6 months to 2 years for the validation of these parts also at the vehicle, at the battery and the cell level. I think in the long term, this presents a good opportunity for any manufacturer who is coming to in India and gain control over the supply chain disruptions, which happened because of the, you know, recently what we have seen is the geopolitical issues.
Right, right. I mean, let's hope, fingers crossed on this aspect of the whole EV scenario here. One more question I wanted to ask you, Ranveer. Now, I'm just curious, I mean, as a auto enthusiast, I mean, Tesla cars, they look really good and they're very strong. I mean, there is his latest, I think that one of which looks like a robo-taxi or an SUV, very futuristic design. So which of the Tesla cars do you think is he going to import and sell in India? Are all of them likely to be made available, or is he going to be looking at a particular price segment? Any thoughts on how you might perhaps approach it? Tesla is also big into driverless cars, right? I mean, so self-driving cars, as they call, are they likely to come in the form of a taxi, robo-taxis as they're called? Like, what are your thoughts on this last question?
Sampath, in terms of the ADAS is concerned, I don't think level 3 or more is going to happen. This automated ones won't be there. In terms of their offerings, I think they should come from the Model 3. That is the one which is the cheapest. They will test the waters with the Model 3, but there will be some offerings in Model S also. That's their one of the topmost model, because if you just recollect 1.5 to 2 years back, when the Maybach sale was happening by the Mercedes-Benz, within 2 days they sold all the whatever vehicles they were put for the sale within 2 days. That means at that price point also, there are certain buyers who are ready to buy the vehicles if they provide them the sense of exclusivity and also the front runner of owning what we call as the Apple of the vehicles. I think these are the two models which immediately they can offer in the market to test the waters and within this 8,000 of the cap which is being levied.
What about the Cybertruck?
Cybertruck, because the one important part with the Cybertruck is the charging time and the battery size which is required. And the infrastructure need for that particular truck is also different. And that is why I didn't point it out that Cybertruck would be the first one which they will be launching. But I'm sure once the company is here, it will be the customized requirements which people will be making. And they might be adhering to some of those.
Right. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day and they were saying that it's likely to come by 2025 and it'll be around 50 lakhs. And, you know, so people are quite excited, you know, about Cybertruck being available in India.
Now, 25, 26, I don't know. I think the type of battery which it deploys right now, providing the charging infrastructure is a big concern for that, even for the Tesla.
Right. I mean, they use a different battery set compared to Nexons and the Tiagos and
yes.
the Tigos. Is it not lithium-ion battery?
It's a lithium-ion battery, but their chemistry perspective, Tesla is the only one which is right now using the NCA chemistry. Nobody else is using NCA. Everybody is using either NMC or LFP. Now, Tesla has also started using the LFP in some parts of the world. They have also, in some of the vehicles which are being sold in the Asia Pacific are with the LFP chemistry because they want to do away with the cobalt content in that because of the issues which are being prevalent, you know, the mining in the Congo and all those issues. And LFP, there is no cobalt. There's zero cobalt in the LFP. But all these are the lithium-based chemistries only.
Right. I mean, anyway, this battery chemistry is a bit too technical and beyond the scope of this podcast. Thank you so much, Randhir. It was an absolute pleasure listening to you talk about this entire ecosystem here. With Tesla and Elon Musk coming into the picture, a lot of interesting things happening and very insightful responses from you. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sampath.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.